Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're really diving into the story of Brendan Urie, you know, the amazing voice of Panic at the Disco.
An incredible talent, no doubt.
Absolutely. But what we think makes his journey so interesting isn't just the music, it's the background, specifically his Mormon upbringing.
Yeah, that's the core of it, isn't it? We've been looking at this article from Christian Culture News, and it really highlights that connection.
It does. It's this unusual mix, right? This deeply religious start against, well, the whole modern pop music scene.
It really gives you a different lens to view his artistic path, his evolution.
Definitely. And just for a little background, Brendan Urie, born April 12th, 1987, St. George, Utah.
And St. George is significant.
Yeah.
Very strong LDS community there.
Right. His family was very involved. And then, you know, Panic at the Disco just explodes onto the scene. He was, what, 16? With his high school friends.
Yeah, formed young. And that first album, A Fever You Can't Sweat Out, back in 2005.
Huge.
Huge. I Write Sins Not Tragedies. Everyone knew that song. And even then, you could kind of hear it, right? That voice, the range.
Oh, yeah. That early stuff had this, like, raw energy. And you could already tell he wasn't going to stick to just one sound. Hints of what was coming.
And thinking about that quick success, so young.
You have to imagine the pressure.
Yeah.
Balancing sudden fame with, you know, the values he grew up with.
And that brings us to something really key. Beyond the music, he's become this, well, really prominent voice for LGBTQ plus rights.
Which is fascinating, given the starting point.
Exactly. Someone from this quite conservative background becoming such a strong advocate, it's that dynamic, that contrast that we really want to explore today based on this article.
It makes sense. And maybe before we go further into Urie's story, it might help to just briefly touch on Mormonism itself. The article gives some context.
Good idea. Lay the groundwork.
Okay, so the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or LDS, founded by Joseph Smith, early 19th century, U.S.-based but now global. And a really central belief is the Book of Mormon. They see it as sacred scripture right alongside the Bible.
So an additional text with significant weight.
Yeah, they believe it contains writings from ancient prophets in the Americas, and it offers a, well, a fuller picture of Jesus Christ's teachings.
Okay. And what about core beliefs, things that would have really shaped his day-to-day, his environment growing up?
Well, the article points to a few key things. There's a big focus on the divine plan of salvation. Family is huge.
Right.
And not just immediate family, but this idea of eternal family relationships, connections beyond this life.
Interesting.
And specific practices like baptism for the dead, which, you know, comes from wanting to offer salvation to ancestors who didn't have the chance.
Yeah.
It shows a kind of theological inclusiveness.
Okay. And community.
Very strong community focus.
Mm.
Values like kindness, integrity, service, plus lifestyle things like abstaining from alcohol, tobacco. It all sort of builds this shared identity.
So you can really picture it. Young Brendan, St. George, Utah, devout family, youngest of five kids. It sounds very tight-knit.
Definitely. Faith, community, those shared values being front and center. And the article mentions a strong work ethic being instilled early on, too.
Right. But the article also mentions this interesting duality in his home life.
Yeah. That's a key insight. Encouragement for his passions, but also sticking to the religious beliefs.
So, like, his early music stuff, learning guitar, piano, his family supported that.
Apparently so. It wasn't like art was totally off limits.
But still, growing up in that kind of conservative religious setting, there must have been tensions as his own artistic identity started forming.
Oh, for sure. The article talks about that internal struggle, trying to balance his love for music with the church's doctrines, figuring himself out.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And music, the article suggests, became this really crucial outlet for him, for emotions, maybe emotions that didn't quite fit neatly with his faith at times.
An outlet, yeah. Because even if his family was supportive musically, the broader community might have had unspoken rules. About what was acceptable art.
Probably. Expectations, yeah. So you have this passion being nurtured at home, but maybe viewed a bit differently outside that bubble.
And the article mentions he was getting into rock punk music.
Right. Stuff not typically part of the Mormon cultural mainstream.
That's the paradox, isn't it? Music being this powerful self-expression tool, but the kind of music potentially creating friction.
Exactly. And the article is nuanced here. It says his family and maybe some social circles did see the positive side of music, sometimes celebrating things, communicating feelings.
So not a total ban, but maybe. Careful navigation.
Something like that. Music was his sanctuary, but also maybe a way to start exploring beyond those religious boundaries as he got older.
Which leads right into identity struggles. The article points out how the church has, you know, teachings and norms that kind of define success, proper behavior.
And it's easy to see how that could clash with someone like Yuri, whose musical ambitions were maybe pulling him in less conventional directions.
Right. And this internal conflict, the article says, led to struggles with self-acceptance.
Which makes total sense. And you hear it in the lyrics, right? Themes of identity, desire, belonging, searching for authenticity against those pressures.
It's like his songwriting became the place to work through it all.
Yeah. The article calls his journey to self-acceptance a nuanced evolution, shaped by both the freedom in his art and the constraints of his upbringing.
Leading him to eventually assert himself, his own individuality.
Which brings us to him leaving Mormonism. A huge turning point, the article highlights.
Yeah, after being so deeply immersed.
He started really grappling with those constraints, feeling limited in his identity, his freedom, especially as he got older and deeper into his career.
The article really flags his need for self-expression as a key driver.
Absolutely. The more rigid parts of the church's teachings, as the article puts it, just didn't mesh with where his art was taking him, especially with panic blowing up in the music industry.
Yeah, that industry context is important. Rock, pop, they often celebrate pushing boundaries.
Exactly. Which can be pretty different from the values in a more conservative religious setting. That friction seems almost inevitable.
Must have been tough, personally, though. The article hints at that.
Oh, yeah. Potential strain with family, friends still in the church. That's common in these situations.
But the flip side, the article notes, was this gain in autonomy. A more inclusive view of the world, maybe.
That need to be fully authentic, it can be overwhelming. If you feel you can't be yourself within a structure, stepping outside feels necessary.
And those experiences, leaving the church, grappling with it all, they became fuel for his music, didn't they?
Probably. The article says these became powerful themes. It contributes to that vulnerable, authentic voice people connect with. He's literally singing his story.
So, thinking about how Mormon culture specifically influenced the music itself.
Yeah, the article argues those values, beliefs, expectations, they're woven in. Even if it's subtle sometimes. Themes of faith, doubt, self-discovery keep popping up.
Right. It's not always overt.
No. The article uses the album Too Weird to Live, Too Rare to Die as an example, saying it captures that tension, the restrictive background versus embracing individuality.
And this is gospel is mentioned specifically.
Yeah, is really digging into faith, the search for meaning, that internal conflict. It's pretty direct there.
What about I Write Sins, Not Tragedies? That's maybe less obviously about faith.
Well, the article suggests one interpretation is exploring societal judgment, maybe hypocrisy, which could tie back to experiences in a community with, let's say, clearly defined standards.
Looking beneath the surface.
Exactly. And just the general vibe in his work, questioning things, exploring the article links that back to wrestling with those early Mormon expectations.
So his music isn't just rejecting his background.
No, it's more like an ongoing conversation with it. Processing it, understanding its impact, even as he moves away from it, it's a blend.
Which is complex. And that brings us to another major part of his public life now, his advocacy for LGBTQ plus rights.
Yeah, a really significant shift, especially considering where he started. The article really emphasizes this transformation.
It's huge. Going from that traditional upbringing to openly identifying as pansexual.
And then using that massive platform he had.
Right. To champion acceptance, equality. The article notes how his openness has sparked conversations, maybe challenged perspectives in some communities.
And it's not just talk, right? The article mentions his charity work, supporting groups like GLSEN, the Trevor Project.
Tangible actions. Shows real commitment.
Definitely. Taking action to help LGBTQ plus folks fight stigma.
The article points out he becomes kind of role model, too, especially for young people maybe struggling with identity in similar conservative backgrounds.
Yeah, showing it's possible to embrace who you are, even if it goes against the grain of your upbringing. He's actively promoting love, understanding, acceptance, challenging some traditional values by doing so.
It really is a full circle journey, isn't it? From devout Mormon kid to this major artist and outspoken advocate, a profound evolution.
Absolutely. The article concludes that those early experiences undeniably shaped his art, his public image, everything.
And his focus on individuality, personal freedom, that really connects with people, doesn't it?
Yeah, a diverse audience. His music isn't just catchy. It reflects those real struggles. The article calls it a beacon for people figuring out their own identities.
That interplay between faith and identity is just central to his whole story.
Mm-hmm. And leaving his traditional faith clearly fueled his art, but also started broader conversations about faith's role and the courage it takes to find your own path.
So wrapping up our dive into Brendan Urie, looking through the lens of this Christian Culture News article, it really paints a picture of resilience. Growth.
Definitely. It highlights how important acceptance is self-acceptance, accepting others.
Yeah.
And that finding yourself is like a lifelong thing.
Yeah. And his story, the article suggests, can inspire people to maybe break free from beliefs that hold them back and just honor their own truth, their own creativity.
Which leaves us with something to think about, maybe for you listening. Thinking about Brendan Urie's path, how much do our personal beliefs and the expectations of our communities really shape artistic expression and our sense of who we are?
Yeah. And what does his story tell us about maybe finding some kind of peace between parts of ourselves that seem to conflict?
It's a powerful question. How do we navigate those complex intersections in our own lives? Lots to chew on there.